So I stand before you, and this morning in particular, I have a confession to make. And here is the confession. The confession is this: I am much more congregational than I am connectional. Now, I know that means nothing on the whole, and it's not really that big a confession, and that most of you, if asked, you would say the exact same thing, that you are more congregational than you are connectional. In the grand scheme of things, not a big confession, but as Presbyterians, one of our essential tenets is that we are a connectional people, that what we do here at Faith Bridge, it affects people in California, in New York, all throughout the country, and what they do affects us. Even if we never step foot in those places, even if we never see those people, even if they never see us. And so to be more congregational than connectional, it is not a deal breaker, but it's not something just to scoff at either. The irony, at least for me, is I didn't start out this way. I started out more connectional than congregational. This is how cool I was when I was in seminary. I wrote an essay lauding how important it was to be connectional. That's how cool I was. And I worked in seminary for a minister who was even more connectional than I was. And so he rubbed off on me, and I was even more. And then I went to my second presbytery meeting, and it went like this. I was there because I was trying to move in the call process, in this ministry process, from being an inquirer, one who is thinking about being a minister, to a candidate, one who is sure enough serious about being a minister. And like all potential candidates, what you have to do is you have to go to the presbytery, you have to talk a little bit about yourself, and then you stand there, and anyone can ask you anything, and you've got to answer the question, and then they vote on you. Okay? It's kind of a big deal, and depending on the presbytery, it's pretty scary. Mine, it wasn't that bad. But what the moderator did is he reminded me as I started to speak that they could say no, and I couldn't go to seminary anymore, so it was a little scary at that point. So the meeting is about to start, and the meeting, this is pre-internet, pre-email, all of that stuff. I am old, I know it. And so what they did is they sent out the docket, what the meeting was going to be like, everything that they voted on, to all the members of the presbytery who would be coming to that meeting. So let's say 300-400 people. It was a lot of stuff to send out. Most people read over it, and they were prepared to come to the meeting. Others, they came, they registered, they sat in the congregation, and you could see that they were reading the stuff then, okay? So there are some who are super prepared, some who are not. Pretty basic stuff. At the meeting, there is always additional stuff that is handed out that didn't make the docket that we're going to vote on or we're going to talk about, okay? You with me? It's pretty basic. It still happens now. One of the ministers in that presbytery, she was blind. And she took her connectional nature very seriously. So she got the docket. She got all the stuff that we were going to talk about. And she transposed it into Braille. She had read it. She brought it with her. She was still reading it. She took it seriously. She couldn't do it with the stuff that was new, that was just given to her. She had no way of transposing it into Braille. That stuff was not accessible to her. And so the meeting begins, and she walks to the microphone before it even starts. And she says, hey, this is who I am. This is the church I serve. I have a recommendation before we even start for the presbytery that we no longer add new items to the docket to be voted on. They are not accessible to me, and it's not fair. And she said, and I thought this was brilliant, if they are that important that we have to vote on them, we should know about them in advance, and it should be no big deal. The moderator, he was not used to having someone stop the meeting before it even started. And so he listened to her and then just kind of ushered the meeting on. She stopped him again, explained her situation a second time, and now it was even a little more confusing for him, and he still tried to usher the meeting on. A third time she stopped him, and now it was awkward for all of us, because those of us who knew what she was saying felt deeply for her. Those who still had no clue, they were frustrated and just wanted the stinking thing to get on so that we could meet together and be done with our stuff. To watch someone who is not being heard, to be in that moment ourselves, is to know what it is to be helpless. It is to see helplessness in fruition, right in front of us. God would have understood this. God understands this perfectly. Because God spent the majority of the time in the Old Testament, we are told, longing to be heard. I am the Lord God, God says over and over again. I am the Lord your God. I am the Lord your God. And because of that, you shall have no other gods before me. You shall not worship idols. You shall not have these false images. You shall not take my name in vain. You shall remember my Sabbath. You shall keep it holy. I am the Lord God, God says over and over again. And then God says other things. You can eat beetles, but not crickets. You can wear clothes as long as they don't mingle fabrics. I am the Lord God. And if you do these things, bad stuff is going to happen. The problem is that sometimes bad stuff did happen, but it didn't happen enough. And so people quit listening. Depending on how you read the Old Testament, sometimes they never listened. And the amazing thing about God is God kept trying. Hear, O Israel, God says in what we read in Isaiah. Listen to me, O Judah. Listen to what I am saying to you. I have loved you. I have called you by name. You are mine. You who are in exile, you are about to walk through the waters. And instantly the people of Israel are going to remember their ancestors who did walk through the waters and know they are going to be okay. The fire, it is not going to consume you, God says. And they're going to think about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they're going to know that they are going to be okay. They're going to think about the bush that God spoke to Moses through, the way it was burned but not consumed, and they are going to know they're going to be okay. And the cool thing about God is God says this, I make these promises to you because I love you, because I have called you by name, and because you are mine. And the promises are the same for us. I have redeemed you, God says. I have redeemed you even when no one else will. Even when everyone else looks at you and all they see is the label, and they refuse to let you be beyond that label. I have redeemed you. I have called you by name, and you are mine. Even when we don't redeem ourselves, even when it is we who cannot forget, and we walk up on a group and we see that they are talking and they are whispering and we are sure they are whispering about us. And they are talking about that thing we want so desperately for no one else to know, that we have worked so hard to keep hidden. I have redeemed you, God says. I have called you by name and you are mine. And you are going to walk through the waters. And the doctor is going to give you news you don't want to hear. And the phone is going to ring at 2:30 in the morning. And I have called you by name, and I will be with you. And it's going to be scary. And it's not going to be fun, but we're going to walk together. And the waters are going to part, but the ground, it's still going to be thick. And the walking is going to be hard. And you might lose your shoes. And then you might find yourselves walking on sticks, and it's going to be hard to walk even more. I will be with you, God says. You will go through the fire, and it's not going to burn. It's going to be hot, and it's going to be uncomfortable. It might singe, but you are going to be okay. I will be with you, God says, because I've loved you. I've called you by name, and you are mine. You who only sees your imperfections, you who believes those lies that people tell you, lies that say you are flawed, that you will never be good enough, that you are not worthy, I have called you by name, God says, and you are mine. You who are more awkward right now in your life than you will ever be again and you ever have been before, I have called you by name, and you are mine. I have called you by name, God says. I love you. I redeem you. You are mine. Our call as people of faith is to hear those words and to do everything we can so that others do as well. So that we can glory in ourselves, we can glory in each other, and all of us together can glory in the one to whom we all belong. I have called you by name, God says, and you are mine.